Hello, and welcome to another video Lighthouse podcast. I'm Pastor Jeff Glenn, and it's my pleasure to take you through the Word each week. We've been in Genesis, and today we're going to be in Genesis chapter 30. Genesis chapter 30 is a pretty big chapter, so we're only going to get through 34, verses 1 through 34. So take a minute and read through that if you haven't. It'll make it worthwhile, as there's a lot, and we just do a 50,000-foot overview here. So today we see in chapter 30 that Jacob, he's experiencing this explosive growth in his family. And it's primarily and exclusively through Leah at this point, as she bears him four sons so far. And so when we remember that Rachel was the one that Jacob loved, and now that we're seeing that Leah is the one who's producing offspring, this brings some tension. And as we learned last week, It's really about God's preference and prerogative that matters in this. And so we'll see that in this chapter. So without being too graphic, we can imagine that Jacob and Rachel's childness was not for a lack of trying, right? I mean, they loved each other, and obviously they were married, and so the marital things happened that would bring about children. But Leah was the one who was producing children. And by this time in our story, we see that she's produced four. And in Genesis, so we'll back up just one verse or two into Genesis 29, where we see this being described in Genesis chapter 29, 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And so because Rachel was the one who was loved, and Leah was, remember, Laban had to trick Jacob into marrying her, and so that can't be a great feeling, but the Lord saw that she was unloved, and so he opened her womb. And so it doesn't necessarily say that God caused the barrenness, although we'll see that Jacob may have thought that later, but this is instructive for us because we see God's mercy towards Leah in her plight of being unloved, and so he intentionally opened her womb. Now we come into chapter 30, where this brings a complaint after Leah's fourth son is born from Rachel. And this complaint starts something of a family squabble. But in the midst of this, we see something notable regarding Jacob's response, namely his belief in the sovereignty of God. And so that's really instructive for us, because remember that up until this point, Jacob has done everything in his power to bring about his own will by his own might and effort and his own scheming. Now we see that he's recognizing the sovereignty of God. Rachel doesn't see it that way, however. She actually is only focused on acquiring for herself a son. She wants what she wants, and she is all about trying to get it in the way that she wants to get it. So namely, she falls back into the practice of Sarah and Abraham in this culturally accepted practice of giving your maidservant to your husband and then having them bear a child that you claim as your own. And so that was cultural, and it was accepted, and it was often done. And so we see the kind of this split in the family. Jacob sees God's sovereignty in Rachel's lack of childbearing, but Rachel only sees her need and fulfilling it in the way that she wants to fulfill it, which harkens back to Abraham and Sarah. So Rachel gives Bilhah to Jacob, and she bore him eventually Dan and Naphtali. And so we'll see this complaint and these responses in the first three verses of chapter 30. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me a child, or else I will die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God, who has withheld you from the fruit of the womb?" So she said to him, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her." And so we know that she did. And again, these two responses, Jacob's like, "Am I God? I'm not the one who's withholding these children. It's God's prerogative to give you children or not." And so this offspring competition between Leah and Rachel would lead both of them to offer their maidservants to Jacob. And that would result in two sons apiece from their maidservants and at least one daughter, Jacob. And so Leah would bear Reuben and Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and then the only daughter that's recorded is Dinah. So it's not entirely implausible to think that there was more daughters, but for some reason Dinah is recorded here. And then Rachel, she bears Joseph, and then later after this story, Benjamin, and her servant would bear Dan and Naphtali. And so so then back to Zilpah, who is Leah's maidservant, is Gad and Asher. I got that a little out of order. But anyway, so these 12 offspring, that they would later have children of their own and their own families, and they would grow and develop into tribes that would later come out of the Egyptian enslavement and then travel into the Promised Land and become the nation of Israel. But that's for another day. But today we get to see how God continues to use these messed up people and their marital squabbles and dysfunction to fulfill his plan and to ultimately glorify him, which is also to our benefit because it benefits us, because we know that he had promised in the beginning to bring about the one who would crush the serpent's head. And then we know that through Abraham and the promise to him to create a great nation and multiply his offspring is greater than the sky or the stars in the sky. So all those promises are coming through these people that we're talking about right now. These 12 sons eventually would grow into the nation of Israel. And so all these children, they're multiplying, and we see that now Jacob is like sensing this responsibility that he has to provide for his posterity, because up until now he's only been working for Laban for his wives, right? So he initially worked the 7 years ostensibly for Rachel, but got tricked into working for Leah, and then he worked another 7 years for Rachel, and then he kind of hung around for another 5 or 6 or 7 years or so to work for Laban. But that brings us to this point here, that almost 21 years of labor later, he's realizing, oh, I got to work for something more than just my immediate satisfaction. I've got these offspring to take care of. So he goes to Jacob. Jacob goes to Laban and says, hey, I need to return to my homeland. I got to actually start taking care of myself. But they work up this system here, because Laban, after this 21 years or so of labor, he doesn't want Jacob to leave. And so he makes this generous offer in Genesis 30:28. And he says to him, name me your wages and I will give it. So he's said, man, anything, whatever you want, as long as you stay here and work for me, I'll give you your wages. And so it's then that Jacob reminds Laban that the fruit of his own labor and the blessing that God has given him has actually prospered Laban, because Jacob has been taking care of his flocks, and his flocks and herds have grown and multiplied and really blessed Laban. And so Jacob, wanting to be out of this manipulative situation, makes a pretty good deal, actually, a deal that really favors Laban over himself. He basically says that his wages, if he were to stay, would be he would remove the speckled lambs from the flocks and the herds, and that only those would be his wages in the future. And so it was a good deal for Laban. Essentially, Jacob said, hey, I'll separate out the good, solid-colored animals, and those will be yours. Anything that's speckled and weak or whatever will be left, and that'll be mine. And so that already reduced Jacob's wages, if you will, to a very small amount. But Laban, being Laban, he agreed to this, but then he had his men remove all the spotted and speckled lambs and livestock away from the herds before Jacob could get to them, which essentially meant that Jacob's labor would be longer, because the idea would be for Jacob to use these speckled and spotted sheep to build enough of a herd for him to be able to take care of his large family so that he could then leave the employment of Laban. And so Laban was indeed treacherous, and sneaky. But Jacob had a plan. And this gets us to Genesis 30:33, when we'll read 30:33. It says here, "So my righteousness will answer for me in my time to come. When the subject of my wages comes before you, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and the brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it's with me." And Laban said, "Oh, that it were according to your word." So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had the same white in it, or that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, he gave them into the hand of his sons. And then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. So what he did is Laban's cheating him out of the potential breeding stock of the speckled ones. But Jacob had a plan, and we'll get to that next week as we get into the rest of Genesis 30 and into Genesis 31, and we'll get to see God's providence through Jacob's husbandry skills. So this week we got to see, and actually week over week we're seeing God's providence in this. But if we were to read this as one story, as we sat down in one setting and read it, we would get to see God's sovereignty as he gets to work through imperfect people to produce his will. And so that's incredibly encouraging since I too am imperfect and God can use me as well. And he can also use you. So until next week, stay encouraged and stay in the Word.